From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes. Harbor masters from around the state finally got the state legislature to pass a derelict vessel fund to assist communities in cleaning up their harbors of forgotten boats. But there is little, if any, money in it. In Homer, the city is going it alone in removing one former highliner, the fishing vessel North Pacific, which will be broken up for scrap after sitting abandoned in the Homer boat harbor for years. As KBBI's Jay Barrett reports, cleaning up after just this one vessel is not cheap.
Ports across Alaska are home to a ghost fleet of derelict vessels. Many are abandoned, left to rot dockside to become hazards to the environment or navigation. There's one in the Homer Boat Harbor. The former fishing vessel North Pacific, which later saw life in gold dredging. The city declared the vessel a nuisance in 2016, and its owners stopped paying moorage fees in 2018. Last April, the North Pacific's hull sprang a leak but was quickly patched before it sank at the dock. Since then, the U.S. Coast Guard funded the removal of all the fuel, oil, and other hydrocarbon fluids, but now the vessel needs to be moved before it sinks. In a memo to the mayor and city council from Homer Harbor Master Brian Hawkins, he said the North Pacific will, if left to its own devices, eventually end up at the bottom of the harbor. A nearly $100,000 ordinance was passed funding the prep, haul out, and breakup of the North Pacific. Larry Sloan testified during the public hearing on the measure.
It's unfortunate that very occasionally they have an individual or owners who will abandon their financial obligations and their vessels. But I've been informed that it's actually a fairly, if not rare, uncommon situation. And I don't know what can be done to mitigate it in the future. There are possibilities with respect to insurance requirements, I guess.
Councilmember Rachel Lord, who works for the State Harbor Masters Association, tells a different story.
I've worked with Brian at the port and others around the state for going on 10 years on the issue of derelict vessels around the state. And I wish it were a more rare occurrence, but there are similar stories all over the state.
Lord said Homer has a strong nuisance vessel code to protect the city, but needs more.
We don't have a great cradle-to-grave solution. And like with the abandoned vehicle fund, the state does now have a derelict vessel fund with a legislative change that we worked hard on a couple years ago. But it, too, is pretty much empty.
The three-part process of disposing of the North Pacific began with getting quotes from qualified firms to inspect the vessel. CNC Diving and Salvage won with a $15,000 bid to make sure the boat is strong enough to haul out. Fortune Sea Marine Services was given a sole source contract in the amount of $20,000 to use airbags to move the North Pacific from the tidal flats to the uplands area of the marine haul out facility. They were the only area contractor with the correct equipment that was interested in the job. Likewise, Alaska Scrap and Recycling was given a sole source contract for the demolition and removal of the scrap. The company is doing the $63,700 of work in exchange for credit towards future lease, wharfage, and dockage fees. The inspection will likely be soon, depending on the tide cycles, with the haul-out scheduled for March. The derelict vessel North Pacific will be broken up by July. I'm Jay Barrett.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org. Let's go! The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
A two-week federal inquiry into the sinking of the fishing vessel Scandies Rose on New Year's Eve 2019 began in Seattle this week. On Wednesday morning, three marine architects, Paul Zankich, Bud Bronson, and Jonathan Parrott, were asked by Barton Barnum of the National Transportation Safety Board about how the effects of icing conditions are calculated in the vessel's stability report. First to answer is Bud Bronson, then Paul Zankich.
We've been talking a lot about accumulation of icing on these vessels. Could one of you just explain to us the amount of icing that the regulations account for on board these vessels that operate in this area?
Item 28550 AB, I guess it's B1, says 1.3 inches on horizontal, 0.65 inches on vertical.
How would you apply these numbers to a stack of pots, given this guidance from the regulations?
I would have a drawing of the vessel that showed where I was going to put pots, and I would calculate the surface area that's vertical and the horizontal, and apply those numbers on there, and using a weight moment calculation, see what that did to the center of gravity. And therein lies the challenge, is that this presumes that that shoebox of crab pots is a shoebox. It's not a shoebox. It does not have a horizontal and a vertical surface. It has a bunch of pots in there that are just screens. As the water comes over the top, it's not going to lay on the top layer of the top on a bunch of pots. It's going to slowly filter down through all of them. And there's the challenge that we have, is we don't have any good information on how that happens.
The Coast Guard should contract with a university, the Navy, or somebody to take a crab pot or a bunch of them and put them in a wind tunnel with wind and put them with spray and see what really happens to a pot. Although we can tell you what's going to happen. We've got photographs of pots that are nothing but ice. But to see how quickly it can accumulate in a, pick a number of 40 knot wind at 15 degrees out. And if we had some of this data, maybe the Coast Guard could revamp their IMO standards here, which are clearly not real life in the North Pacific.
The U.S. Navy has a publication on, talks about icing of vessels. And the challenge is that they're all solid surfaces.
One follow-on question, my last question here, to you, Mr. Bronson. You mentioned earlier you taught some stability classes. Could you elaborate on that some, please?
For 5 years, I taught a one-week course on ship stability. And we talked about icing. But the challenge even then was we didn't have any good information on how a crab pot ices, so we used the IMO criteria, which says use the outside of the crab pot. And a crab pot isn't really a box. It's this sieve that collects ice all through it.
Turn it over to counsel representing Vessel Owners Matson Management Company.
So if I characterize it as you are three interested citizens with specialized knowledge who are volunteering your expertise to the industry, is that a fair assessment of what you're doing?
Well, let me make a statement here. If you're a crabber, you have to believe the Coast Guard standards. You have to believe the IMO standards. You have to believe your naval architect. All of these three beliefs need review in this inquiry, because we are the naval architects who are asking our owners and operators to believe. And we rely upon the Coast Guard standard to believe. and the IMO standard to believe. And honestly, I don't believe those standards now.
Mr. Bronson, care to comment on that?
I think he reasonably describes our problem. We understand how the IMO came up with the standards they have for icing. But the crab fishery in the Northwest Pacific is significantly different than anywhere else. I've done work everywhere from Northern Europe, China. I'm doing work now down in New Zealand. This fishery is different than all of the others in that we have this lovely device called a crab pot, which we all love because we love Alaska king crab and all like that. But it doesn't behave the way we're told we should apply the rules. And at least from my own point of view, I've had a master's license. I've sailed. I've been up there. I've done tuna fishing. I want those guys to come back. And with apologies to the ladies, I want those guys and gals to come back. I want the stuff that the work that I do, I want them to give them a chance to come back alive. And with the king crab pots right now, I don't want to restrict them if I don't have to, but I sure would like to make sure that the information I'm giving them is the best chance to come back alive.
When a stability study for a vessel like the Scandi's Rose is done, according to the current regulations, does it assume that ice accumulates on the outside areas of the pots only?
That is correct.
Mr. Zankich, reality versus regulations, how do they match up?
Well, I, as a naval architect, don't believe the regulation.
Mr. Parrott?
I believe the regulations provide a minimal guidance in the application of ice. I know that there are situations where the boats will be out and they will accumulate much more ice than regulations provide guidance for.
But since Mr. Bronson has pointed out there are no good studies on exactly how much additional ice accumulates, do you have good quantitative data to provide to your captains as they consider additional icing?
No, we do not.
Well, that's the report. Thanks very much to KBBI's Jay Barrett.